What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I am Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of comic books that have come out today, Wednesday, my favorite day of the week, because it's hump day, and that's when I get to humpty hump.
What?
What? You fellas love the humpty hump.
Yeah,
ladies love the humpty hump. We all love hump day.
Yeah, sure.
That's what the song's about.
I don't think that's what it's about.
Wednesday is your chance to go to the comic book shop. To the hump, to hump. That's what I always say every time I walk into Midtown Comics.
I love how well you know that song that you can kind of then mix it up like that.
If you guys want to check out my album of parodies, it's called Zalboos, because they're really bad. All right, let's jump into some comic books because there's so much stuff to talk about today. I want to kick it off talking about Daredevil number 612, which is the end of Charles Soule's run on the title.
Wait, this is the last issue?
Yeah, man, he dies in this one.
Right, but like...
no spoilers, I guess. But the issue arc is called...
This is it? This is his last issue?
Yeah, there's all these notes in the back about, wow, what a great run we had, how wonderful. We knew this was going to be his last issue.
He's got to do one more after this, right?
No, this is his last...
You can't leave it there.
What are you talking about?
I have so many fucking questions.
Pete, we've known this for months, that this would be his last issue. This is where he's ending up.
I can't believe he ended it like this. Arc.
That's what every Daredevil writer... Okay, look. So this is the end of Charles Soule. I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say that the MO for Daredevil for years now has been whenever a writer leaves the title, they completely fuck the title for the next writer.
Right.
That's basically what they do. Like, leave Daredevil in an impossible position. There's no way you can write yourself out of this hole. And then that writer figures out a way to get out of that hole and come at the title in their own way. Chip Zdarsky is coming on pretty soon with a new arc on Daredevil. But this is Charles Soule very much finishing up everything that he had to say about Daredevil in this title and wrapping it up in a way that seems like Daredevil will never continue after this point, right?
I don't know about that.
So let's talk about the issue, though.
Can we please?
Sure. So the issue, we pick up at the end of the last issue with Matt Murdock and his brother, Mike Murdock, being taken to safety. They go to a hospital. We go through a number of huge things that happen, including a showdown with a new villain called the Vigil. Kingpin of Crime gets taken down as the mayor of New York. All the superheroes show up at the trial. Everything is wonderful. And then here's the big twist, folks. We're definitely going to spoil it right here. We find out that Matt has been on the operating table the entire
time.
The
whole time. It's just a fucking dream sequence.
So I love this. Here's why I love
what?
This. Because
what?
Well, you can say what, and then I'm going to answer what. Okay. So last issue.
So you like it when you're completely committed to something, and then at the end it reveals, just kidding, it was a dream. Fuck you.
No, I think you're onto something. And the reason I think you're onto something is because I wasn't completely committed to this. And the reason I wasn't completely committed to this,
which brother thing, right?
Hold on. Just let me finish the sentence. Well, Jesus Christ, you always do this to me on this show. You're always interrupting me not letting me finish points, Pete.
Yeah. How's it feel?
It's very frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
I hope nobody ever
Welcome
does that.
Welcome to my 16 fucking
years.
Hey,
let me finish. I'm just saying, I hope nobody ever does that to you. Anyway, I just noticed that we're sitting in the office at the pit and they have boxes of candy canes. What is going on
Stop
here?
Stop being distracted and get your fucking point out.
Oh, yeah. So last issue, we talked about this on the live show, involved Daredevil facing down his greatest villains after being chased through the city by a bunch of stilt men into Madison Square Garden and fighting all of them and taking them down with essentially
so
one punch.
So cleanly, like with one throw, he took them all out.
And I remember on the live show, I believe I said that it felt kind of weird and like it was too quick. It felt like it was a fantasy version of what would actually happen rather than the hard stuff that would happen to Daredevil. Retroactively now, that makes a lot of sense, as does everything else that happened in this arc so far, where everything came too easily to Daredevil. And what we're learning here is that his life is still going to be hard, but he is still going to fight through it no matter what. So we get a bunch of blank pages at the end where he has died. Like, I think he dies on the operating table. But then because he's Daredevil, because he doesn't know how to quit, he just keeps fighting. He becomes that light in the darkness again, as it says towards the end of the issue. And I think that's really beautiful.
It's very powerful, but it's also a little upsetting because, like, I've been living this whole thing, and then it's like, oh, it was a lie. Oh, it's like, you know.
Didn't it make you feel a little better to know that that Bullseye doesn't actually miss? Like, Bullseye messed up the last issue.
Well, his brother saved him, so he doesn't actually have this weird brother thing that came out of nowhere, right? That's all part of the dream.
No, I believe he has a weird brother.
That's just stupid. A weird brother that comes out of nowhere?
I could be wrong.
Okay.
Maybe I'm misreading it, but I think it's just this arc didn't happen.
All right. Well, because, yes, that whole fight in Madison Square Garden was such an amazing buildup. But I also liked how, like, yeah, he's fought in these guys so many times. Why wouldn't you evolve a little bit and be like, okay, if I play them against each other? And I was like, oh, man, what a cool way to be like,
I guess, except you, that makes the villains all into punks, and they're not. They're, like, A-level can-destroy-the-city type villains most
sure,
of the time.
But I mean, if Daredevil's fought them 80 million times, it'd be nice to know that he knows
their
weaknesses.
They've also fought Daredevil billions of times, so right. They know his weaknesses and they know how to take him down.
That's true, I guess.
I think it explains a lot. Let's stop talking about last issue and instead talk about the run as a whole. What did you think about Charles Soule's run now that it's over?
I loved it up until the end. I really loved it up until the end. I think it's smart. It's powerful what he did at the end. But I just felt like he also took some stuff away from us at the end, which was tough. And the court stuff was beautiful and, like, cool. But the fact that it wasn't real kind of hurt a little bit.
I like that, too, because, frankly, I was bummed out when they took the Kingpin down so easily in that court case. I was bummed about the idea of losing him as mayor of New York.
Yeah, but I also liked the way he was played.
It was too easy. And it was fantasy wish fulfillment. I mean, we've talked about this again a lot on the show, but it's pretty clear that the Kingpin is a stand-in for Trump, right? Like, even if he's the mayor of New York. So this idea that you could get him on an easy technicality, get him into court, play to his weaknesses, and just get him to admit everything, that everything is to be good from now on, that's not how the world works, and that's not how Daredevil works. Yeah. So I see that as Charles Soule, without reading too much into his politics, writing a little bit of wish fulfillment for the current world that we're living in right now, but ultimately knowing that we're not going to get out of this.
Yeah, what sucks is I can't wake up from this dream, though. You know what I mean? His character can, but I can't. So it's a little
do
like...
Do you want me to shoot you in the leg?
No.
I'm just saying, maybe that'll help.
No. No, it would not help.
I got a gun right
here. You're also not Bullseye, and you wouldn't shoot me well enough where it would go straight through.
Like in your nuts or whatever.
You're a fucking dick. I just think that I loved his run. I think he's an amazing writer. I think what he did was powerful and cool. I just, I don't know. It was nice to see Daredevil get a W, and I'm sad it was fake. You know?
What I liked best about Charles Soule's run is the amount that he added to Daredevil's rogues gallery and the continuity. It was a great run overall.
Blindspot, awesome.
Stuff is really good. Blindspot was great. Muse was great and terrifying. Vigil was really good as well.
The Ten Fingers thing, that was awesome.
Yeah, these are all really good villains that, even if they're quote-unquote dead, I'm excited to see again in some form because I'm sure that some other writer will pick them up. And that's the best thing you could do in the Marvel Universe. At this point, rather than running through the same things over and over again, to create really good, really clear, iconic villains is very hard, and I think that's what's happened here.
Plus, he did a great job of doing the lawyer stuff in a way that was really cool from somebody who obviously knows. So it was
that's lawyer stuff is called the law, just so you know.
Whatever, dude. All right. I'm not a fucking...
I got you on a technicality. I must be dreaming.
Yeah. I really thought he did overall amazing job. Super happy that he got to do Daredevil. And I think he really put his stamp on it, which was great. I love the whole Kingpin Mayor thing. I thought it was such a cool thing to see. And I was very happy with his run overall.
All right, we got a lot more books to talk about, so let's turn it over to DC Comics. Heroes in Crisis, number 3. You've been very mixed about the series, I think, Pete.
Yeah.
How are you feeling after this issue?
Still fucking... what the fuck is going on? Like, this is so creepy, and it keeps getting creepier.
Well, this was a super upsetting issue in particular. Yeah. For those of you who haven't been reading the series, the idea is that there's a place called Sanctuary that was built by Batman.
I'm sorry. Okay,
Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, in order to help heroes deal with their PTSD after big missions. It's existed for a long time in the DC universe. We're just hearing about it now. The series kicked off with a bunch of heroes dead at the doorstep of Sanctuary. We've found out the first issue that it seemed like Harley Quinn did it. The second issue, it seemed like Booster Gold did it. This issue definitely confuses things a whole lot.
What?
Well,
no,
we'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
But what this does is this zooms back quite a bit to show us not exactly what was going on, but pieces of what's going on. And in particular, focus on three heroes that seemingly are dead in the series. Wally West, Lagoon Boy, and it focuses on Booster Gold, but it also shows Roy Harper.
Yeah.
So we get to see a little bit more about them as well as how Sanctuary works. And it's rough, man. It's rough to watch them go through.
Goon Boy shit was fucking heartbreaking.
Yeah. All of this, it shows the trauma they're going through, how they're trying to work through it with almost this danger room type scenario where they relive their traumas or deal with them in the way that they want to deal with them, which is an interesting technique.
Yeah, it's also very therapist-y where it's like, is that what you want? Where they're just turning whatever you're saying into a question and not really, you know, helping you at all.
Yeah.
But also, like, it was really, I thought, very cool that Booster Gold chose to, like, talk to Booster Gold.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense with Booster Gold.
But it's also, like, this is the problem I had with the Vision thing. It was like, hey, you love superheroes? Well, let's take the thing that you like and make it super depressing and super real and fucking let's sit in some issues. And it's like, God damn it, no! This is my escape. Why?
Well,
I don't
want to
feel these things.
I think that's wonderful. Here's why I think it's wonderful is because you can still have that escape. You can still have those fluffy comic books. They're being published, a lot of them, every single month, several of which we're going to be reviewing on this podcast.
Yeah. You know what's also cool is like when you see somebody just fucking get hit in the head with a giant mallet and then Harley Quinn's like, hey, what's up? Oh, hey. Hey, how long you been here? How's things going?
That's pretty upsetting.
Don't fucking have small talk with me. You just bashed in my boy's fucking head. Like, what the fuck?
So I'm very curious to see what direction the series is going to go in, particularly because last issue left off with the seeming implication that we're going to get kind of an identity crisis type thing where all of these secrets were going to leak out into the world. That's not what's followed up on this issue. Instead, we get more of a sense of the mystery of what's going on. And my sense of it at this early going is that something is happening with Sanctuary. We don't know what it is yet. It certainly seems like maybe Booster did something. It definitely seems like Harley did something, but it's not clear why they're doing the things they're doing or if there was somebody else doing the things that were happening. There's a lot more going on here and a lot more to delve into, which I think is a very good place for the series to be at this point.
Are you enjoying yourself with this?
I'm not having fun reading it, but I think it's incredibly well-written, gorgeously drawn, and it's a intriguing story that I don't feel like I've read
before.
It's
a fucking stress dream is what this is. I have to fucking read this thing. I'm sweating. I don't like it. It's powerful. It's interesting. But God damn it, it's not enjoyable.
Can I throw something out at
it's
you?
It's maddening.
I have a theory for you. I think the villain of the series is Psycho Pirate.
What?
Because there's a thing in this issue where everybody is anonymous, right?
Right.
And they put on these masks, they put on these robes to hide their identities.
And this is the mask that What's-Her-Face, Madam What's-Her-Face was rocking for a while, right?
Madam Mask?
Yeah.
That's in the Marvel Universe, Pete.
Oh, well, it kind of looks exactly like
it. It looks like the Psycho Pirate mask, is what I'm saying. Oh. And I think it would make a lot of sense if it turned out they were using Psycho Pirate technology or Psycho Pirate mask technology in some way to help people work through their emotions, and it backfired on them. And what we find out is there's not Harley Quinn decided to murder all these heroes or Booster Gold murdered all these heroes or anything, but that in some way they all ended up killing each other. That's my theory right now, that their trauma blew back on all of them. There was some sort of feedback loop with those masks. We'll see whether I'm correct or not, but I don't know. That's what I'm thinking.
If this is all
a
dream, I'm going to be fucking
super
pissed.
No, I don't think it's a dream. I don't think it's a dream. I think it's really happening. Every comic book.
If it's just a Danger Room thing, they're like, wow, you guys went real dark and weird in this simulation.
That's possible.
That.
I mean, every comic we're going to talk about today is going to be a dream, so we'll see. All right, let's move on to a Dark Horse comic that's not out until December 5th, so no spoilers on it.
No spoilers.
But LaGuardia, number one, one of my two favorite airports in New York, I got to tell you, and it does involve, I will spoil
not
this.
Not a fan of Newark, huh?
No, it's too far. It's actually a very nice airport, but it takes too long to get there.
Oh, boy.
JFK, usually much better than LaGuardia, I'd say. What would you say?
Okay. I don't know if there's a fucking difference, really. It's a shit show no matter where you're going, man.
This comic is not a shit show, though. It is about a Earth many years in the future when aliens have legally started to come here.
It's like Men in Black,
kind of. Yeah, kind of. But does it less on the action and more on the real world implications of illegal immigration and colonization and other things like that. What did you think about this book, Pete?
And don't forget about annoying white people.
We're the worst.
Yeah, we are. We are. It's hard. Cause it's true. I'm interested. I'm in. I want to see how it unfolds.
What I particularly like about this is the design of the aliens. It doesn't feel like other books that I've read before. Yeah. They really run the gamut from super cute to super weird. There's a lot of vegetation-based aliens, which I think is interesting. Some of the writing occasionally was a little janky to me in terms of the way the sentences were structured.
Sentence structure bothers Albin.
It does. But it got better as it went along, and it got smoother as it went along. Certainly, I was much more interested after the first bit of setup. I'm really curious to see what happens. And I always am a big fan of comic books putting a layer of metaphor over real world stuff. So it should be cool to see what happens. Let's move over to something that's a little more your area of expertise, Pete. From Marvel Comics, Dead Man Logan, number one.
Not Dead Man Walking, Dead Man Logan.
Not Old Man Logan, Dead Man Logan. So, Old Man Logan faced down the Maestro in his own series and used this formula called Regenics to boost up his healing factor. That backfired on him, and he's lying dead in the snow when we pick up with him here. And now a bunch of forces, of course, are arrayed against him while he tries to take out the last couple of people on his list. He was shunted from an alternate reality where a bunch of villains fucked up his life. He ostensibly came here at the beginning of his own series to kill them, and he never really got to that. So now he's trying to get to that. What'd you think about the issue, Pete?
I really enjoyed this. I thought it was really cool, very badass. I was a little disappointed in how it was handled. I felt like, obviously, if you go into a room with the bar there and fuck up a bunch of bad guys and then walk away and leave the most powerful one, like, that was just, I was like, yeah, of course that's going to blow up in your face, you dumbass. Like, why would you do that? If you're going to take out all the villains, take out all the villains. Don't leave the most powerful one.
One thing that I was really surprised about with this issue is how funny it was. The Dead Man Logan series, I think by necessity, has been pretty serious most of the time. There's been fun, weird stuff that has happened.
Old Man Logan.
Old Man Logan, thank you. weird stuff that happened, particularly the last arc, was crazy dark.
Mm-hmm.
This involves Glob, one of the weirdest X-Men characters. There's some funny jokes with him where he's, you know, maybe having a little private time on the computer and other things.
It's on Tinder. He's kind of, you know.
Is that what you think was happening?
Yeah.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Throughout, there's funny jokes. There's funny jokes at some of the characters' expense, particularly Hawkeye's expense. Yep. I really enjoyed this a lot. I was a little hesitant about this one because I feel like this has run its course as a storyline.
How can we keep this bit going here?
But I think we know how it's going to end as of this issue. I'm excited to check it out, though.
Yeah, me too.
All right, moving on to an Image comic book, The Warning, number one. This is a new title. I thought this was great. I am a little hesitant to say anything in particular about it, other than it seems on the surface to be a war book that is slowly and very carefully told over the book. I actually wasn't sold for most of the time up until the end. Mostly I was sold on the art, which is allowed to speak for itself. There's not a ton of dialogue, but then it reveals what the series is about in the very final pages.
Yeah.
And that's a big turn for it. Again, I know I'm being vague, but what'd you think, Pete?
Well, that's the thing. Like, you're kind of in the dark. You get these kind of time dashes. You're trying to piece it together, and they don't give it to you until the last page, which is a little frustrating. It's hard to go all in when it's like you get that, you're kind of left dangling for a while, and you don't know who to like and who to root for here. You're seeing different characters. So, I don't know. I was excited by the last thing and being like, oh, now I get it. Okay, I could be on board. But I am going to pick up the next issue and see how it goes.
I agree with you. I think it does play a little coy, so it's the sort of thing that might read excellently in the trade. But the art is so good and so simple and so clean throughout. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a striking-looking comic book.
Definitely. Definitely.
All right, moving back to DC Comics, Aquaman Justice League Drowned Earth number one. This is wrapping up the Drowned Earth storyline, kicking off the next big Aquaman storyline. There have been a bunch of sea gods who invaded Earth, covered the entire Earth with water that turned everybody into sea monsters. Turned out it was all a plot by the Injustice League that manipulated the whole situation. Aquaman lost his powers. Black Manta got his powers. Superman's running around with an eye patch, real cool one that says S on it. So that's pretty sweet. It was nice that he had that made.
Yep.
Crazy stuff happening. We've been enjoying the storyline a lot. Do you think it wrapped up well?
Yes, I do. I thought it was an amazing arc, really high stakes. I really liked how it developed, how the things came together. I love a big, like, Black Manta Aquaman showdown. It didn't disappoint. I thought it really did a great job of kind of like, yes, we kind of know the tropes, but it still was like true to them and kind of made it feel fresh. I very much enjoyed this comic. I loved how it ended. I love the choices that it made. And I also love the, you know, Aquaman and Mera moments, especially. I thought this was a great arc. It's been a while since I loved a DC arc this much.
I also really like this arc a lot. This was not my favorite issue of the arc necessarily, but it is so jam-packed with insanity. It's hard not to love.
Yeah.
I think it wrapped up really well. And listen, there's a thing called the Death Kraken in this book, which is an enormous monster who's breaking through into our reality. And if it touches the water on Earth, it'll poison all of Earth and kill everybody. That's bananas. Yeah. And that they spend most of the issue fighting a Death Kraken really sold me on the thing, even when there were these dense sections with sea mythology, which, mind you, personal preference, not my favorite thing. Mm-hmm. It powered me through that. And the action is big and great, like you said. And I'm excited to see what happens with Aquaman next, which I don't know that I've ever said that out loud before.
Great.
All right, moving back to Marvel Comics, Ironheart number one. This is a highly anticipated book.
Yes.
Particularly because, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the writer said on Twitter, hey, I'd really like to write an Ironheart book. And then folks on the internet were like, yeah, man, let her write an Ironheart book. And now she's doing an Ironheart book. Pretty cool if I got that story correct. What'd you think, Pete?
Well, I really like this book. I also like the way that you got to enjoy the fact that a superhero is enjoying it being a superhero. She's kind of like flying around monologuing, and I really enjoyed it, and I enjoy how much we got to get into her head a little bit and see how she sees the world. And it was sweet and intense and fun, and there's a lot of great action. I'm completely on board. I love the art. I feel like this is could be a really great book.
Yeah, I like this quite a bit as well. There's so much going on here. It's very packed with ideas mm-hmm. and characters. It's not totally clear to me what the thrust of the book yet is, just because Riri Williams does so many different things in this issue and so many different things are going on with her. But there is enough there to like. Riri is a good character and she's well captured here. The action stuff is fun. It brings in a very little used Spider-Man villain in a really yep. fun way. Like I said, I don't think it's quite as clear as, say, the Iron Man book in terms of what the thrust of it is. But I really like it a lot. I think it's good. I think there's a lot of different places they can go, which is the coolest part.
Yeah, definitely.
Moving on to one from RKS/Boom Studios, Jim Henson's Labyrinth Under the Spell number one. This is a collection of short stories set in the world of Labyrinth. Pete, are you a fan of Labyrinth?
Nope.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Follow-up question. Why are you a terrible person?
Yeah, we should say that this is Zalvin's favorite movie of all time.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
That's pretty much it.
I mean, it is.
I mean, your birthday, you rented out a movie theater and everybody hung out and watched Labyrinth.
Yeah, I mean, that was my birthday party.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Star Wars wasn't available.
But yeah, when I saw Labyrinth for the first time, I thought it was amazing. David Bowie's phenomenal.
What about when you saw it for the 50th time? It was still amazing, right?
Well, yeah, I don't know.
Better every single time I see it.
But yeah, and I thought this was a cool idea. I've never read a comic that was like kind of a different tales of Labyrinth, so I thought it was really well done. I thought it was, you don't have to like know Labyrinth by heart to kind of get this, but if you kind of know the characters they're talking about, makes it a little bit more enjoyable. Yeah, I was impressed by this.
What I liked about this is because I like Labyrinth so much, I'm always very hesitant to see anything more about it because it does feel like this perfect, neat package of a movie. But all three of these stories fit in very nicely, and I don't think they detracted for the movie. They added nice notes. They captured the voices really well. The first story, The Eternal Tournament,
one is my favorite.
By S.M. Vidari with the art by Sarah Webb, tells the story of Sir Didymus and how he ended up in the Bog of Eternal Stench.
Yeah.
The voice for Sir Didymus is perfect. The way that he ends up there is really sweet and fun, and it's just a very good story.
Yeah.
So that alone is, I think, worth the price of admission. But then you get two other stories there that are also pretty cute and fun, give a bit of origin information that, overall, while not necessary, it's fun to have, I think.
I also really liked the depiction of David Bowie in this. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah. Did he remind you of the Babe?
No.
No, your line is what, Babe?
I'm not going to engage in this.
Did he remind you of the Babe?
Nope.
Oh, God damn it. I'm going to kill you. All right. Last one we're going to talk about is Return of Wolverine number 3 from Marvel Comics. Lots of Wolverine this week.
Yeah. Lots of Charles Soule this week.
Yes, he wrote this one as well. Finally, get a little Hot Claws action in this issue.
Finally, Hot Claws. People are like, why do you need Hot Claws? This issue answers that question.
Does it? Does it?
When you go up against somebody who has cold powers, you need Hot Claws.
So the X-Men manage to track down Logan as he is trying to track down Persephone, the villain who seemingly brought him back to life, though we're not clear on that yet. We're certainly going to get some answers next issue, it seems like. But most of this is one big fight scene, and spoiler, Logan takes on the X-Men. This is a lot of fun. Kind of upsetting, though, to see him taking everybody down like this.
Yeah, it's also weird to see that Jean Grey in that outfit. It's a little emotional to see her like that, you know?
In her old outfit, you mean?
Yeah.
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 It's Logan taking down his friends because he doesn't really have his memory anymore.
And there's these weird flashbacks where it's him talking to himself about how he's going to take down.
The thing that's been running through the series is it's almost like the Hulk of the trunk over in the Hulk series. It's very much
the old Hulk in the trunk.
You know, it's a Hulk in a trunk.
Yeah.
That's the storytelling
that Marvel trope. You know, the old Hulk in the trunk.
When you took creative writing classes in college, they talked about you got to have a Hulk in a trunk. Right?
If you're going to be a writer, you got to have a Hulk in a trunk.
Right. Any story. Yeah. So this Hulk in a trunk is a Logan in a jail. But it does call back to, we talked about this with the first issue, it calls back to the way that Wolverine used to be back before he regained his memory, where he'd have these pockets of remembering things, and there were almost these different Wolverines. So I think it's a neat way of bringing it back. I'm curious to see if they continue it as a storytelling convention, or if he finds some sort of integration of his personalities by the end. But I think it's neat right now.
Yeah. I'm bored with this. I hope this unfolds well, because right now there's a lot of head scratching to what's going on and why it's happening, but I'm still on board.
All right, we'll see what happens. And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support us at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater in New York. Totally free. Come on by. Pete, what else do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live, and our website, comicbookclublive.com, for this podcast and very more. Many more, excuse me. And we'll see you at the comic book shop.
Oh, yeah.